Now, the state of our mental health, and especially at the moment, is top of mind for everyone. And it seems every day there's a story about the lack of mental health services available and the issues facing our young people. Dr. Sarah Watson knows all about it as a clinical psychologist specialising in child and adolescent mental health. And she joins me now. Atamarie, Sarah.
Atamarie, Anna, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. I'm good, but it's a pretty tough time for many people at the moment, isn't it?
It is so much. We like to think that, I think, through times like a pandemic, and especially, you know, in Auckland with such a protracted long level 4 lockdown, that it's going to bring the best out of us, but it doesn't always, does it?
It sure doesn't. What sort of increase are you seeing in the number of young people needing help?
It's been a phenomenal increase. It started, I guess, from the last lockdown in level 4 when in 2020, and has just increased from there. And it goes right across the ages as well. It's children and adolescents, plus a lot of parents are under a lot of stress.
They sure are. What sort of increase, what sort of effects are people or young people showing? What are they presenting with?
I think it's interesting because obviously what a child is going to experience is often different from what an adolescent is going to experience. So for children, we're seeing, I think, the impact of the home and school situation just having changed so much, and the changes themselves. So for that, we're seeing a lot more anxiety, and I would say probably anxiety is the thing that we're seeing the most across the board, but also keeping in mind that that presents itself differently in children than what it does in adolescents or teenagers. So for children, for example, we tend to see more kind of like behavioural aspects to the anxiety. So some might kind of shut down and be quiet, kind of like that freeze response that you hear about, whereas others you might get more of that kind of fight or flight response. And with that, some quite kind of more frustration and anger, or some of that more frightened, asking lots of questions, things like that. So it's quite different between children and adolescents. I'd say the adolescents probably tend to either become quite worried and perhaps even really concentrate a lot on what might go wrong or what could happen, worst case scenarios, or really spend too much time in their rooms, in bed, with the curtains closed, and it's not good for our moods, is it?
No, it certainly isn't. And we'll come to how to help them in a moment, but we have just had a question in from a listener here. Our 5-year-old daughter has periods of hyperactivity and anger and frustration, and you can't reason with her during these periods as she won't listen. She's extremely challenging during these periods, and it not only affects my husband and I, but it's really hard for her 3-year-old brother as well. It seems to be getting worse as the lockdown continues. How can we calm her and get her to listen?
Yeah. Look, what a great question. Thank you. Because I think probably there will be a lot of people who would be in a similar situation. Like I was saying before, these times of not only the transitions between the levels, which means there's a lot of change, but also during especially the level 4 lockdowns, and when children and parents, like whole families, are at home for extended periods of time, then that means that they don't have the usual outlets. So for children that are 3 and 5, especially for a 5-year-old, and most 5-year-olds, they're ready to spread their wings, and that's why we send them off to school at that age, because you know, home and the home environment is not set up for the type of exploration that they really ideally need. So with the young person who's demonstrating these kind of behaviors, like feeling more frustrated and annoyed, there are two things to do. Number one, we want to kind of try and intervene early so that hopefully these kinds of emotional experiences don't happen in the first place. So that means making sure that they're getting good amounts of sleep, that they're eating well, all those kind of basics. And then the next thing is to make sure at that age that they've got loads and loads of opportunity for play. It's really important to be able to create, to be able to make a mess, and also to have attention. So with that, and this is where it gets so hard, Anna, because with parents being at home and trying to juggle work and also looking after the kids, being able to spend that time with them, because usually they would have, you know, their preschool teachers or their school teachers or other people who are there to be able to be with them. So it's trying to balance that attention and then also that need for play and exploration and being able to get out. Now, if that's done, then hopefully it won't lead to those other behaviours. But let's say that doesn't make enough of a difference and there's still those difficult behaviours that are emerging. The key there is to help soothe. So honestly, trying to reason with anybody who's upset, whether they're a child, an adolescent, or an adult for that matter, can be often really hard, and sometimes it's not really appropriate. Mm. The best thing to do instead is to try and decrease stimulation, decrease sensory needs, calm and give some nice reassurance and soothing until it's calmed down, and then you can talk and try and get them to listen. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes absolute sense. Yeah, totally. What about teenagers? You know, this has been an incredibly hard lockdown, and especially teenagers facing NCEA exams and internals, and helping them deal with disappointment. What advice have you got for parents and for teens themselves?
Yeah, look, I've got teens in my family as well, and it certainly is difficult. Because it can feel like forever changing sands, like they're not sure when exams are going to be, are they going to have mocks, are they not going to have mocks, and then there's differences between different schools, so their friendship groups, depending on whether they're at the same school or other schools, are, you know, can be different too, which makes it all very, very confusing. And I guess therein lies the tips that and the things that they need to really focus on, which is those things that ground us, the ones that give us structure and they give us routine. So making a good plan, like if you've got a teen who is feeling really anxious, worried, stressed, the best thing to do is sit down with them. Just go through, okay, what is it that is now, and usually the schools are being really, I think, excellent, most of them, in putting things up on their school websites. There's also people that they will send out and give information for contact details. Contact them if you need to, so that you can help them get really clear about what's happening, how they're going to do it in terms of when the exams are, when the mocks are, when different things are due. The other thing is too, we hear quite a lot at the moment that because there's not as much structure and there's not as much kind of immediate accountability, quite a few teens have gotten behind in their work. Mm. Look, every school that I talk to, the teachers are pragmatists, the deans are pragmatists. All they want is they want to make sure that their students and their learners succeed as best as they can. So don't hesitate in getting in touch. And that might take you as a parent getting in touch, because sometimes that's a hard thing to do as a teenager, to put your hand up and go, I haven't done the work. But look, a lot of the time, the teachers and the deans that I've spoken to, you know, they're more interested in helping than they are of anybody getting into trouble. So I'd really recommend doing that too.
Mm. I think I was hearing somewhere just recently, the last few days, about the engagement and trying to keep the kids motivated, especially the teenagers motivated for their online schooling. It's gone from some classes of 70% engagement online to just 10%. How do you keep especially the teenagers motivated to stay online?
Yeah, really good question. Look, it's hard. I've got to be honest. You know, and it's different as well. You've got some teenagers who are just naturally really quite self-motivated, and they're always probably going to be motivated learners, right through to you know, teenagers that haven't actually been all that engaged in their learning anyway, and now there's kind of less, as I was saying before, accountability around it in a way. So I mean, as parents, the best thing to do is to try and provide kind of structure and support. So with that, I mean, boundaries are always good, aren't they? And with that, making sure that they wake up at a decent time, they go to sleep at a decent time, that they understand that there's an expectation and you support them to do their schooling. It's usually better to do it in the mornings. Not all schoolwork is required throughout the day. From what I understand, it depends on what the different needs are. So, and some may need your support if you have time to be able to do it. And that there is the rub again, isn't it? Is that some parents don't always have the time to be able to do that. But I mean, that's where if it helps, you can have your teenager next to you at your desk or all sitting around the family table. But doing things like making sure you have morning tea together, lunch together, you go out for walks, like you have your time away and together and on task in terms of school or work and off task. Because that's the hard bit about being at home a lot. Is that you've not got that kind of transition period between work and home, and you've also not got that structural change between work and home. So it can be really hard for teenagers that are used to just kind of chilling, you know, when they get home. And then, oh no, now I've got to do a lot more work than what I'm used to doing.
The loneliness and the isolation is really difficult too for a lot of children. And we've just had a text in from someone who says that they have, they parent alone and they have an only child.
Yeah.
And how do they deal with that and the loneliness the isolation that this six-year-old is feeling?
Oh gosh, you know what, I think that just hits the nail on the head. You know, I was thinking, you know, leading up to this, about what would be the thing that I think really stands out the most as an area of real challenge, and I think that's probably loneliness. Loneliness for everyone, you know, and isolation. And what does that do? We tend to then become more kind of myopic. We tend to look inwards more. And when that happens, then we feel more and more alone. We don't necessarily reach out in the same ways that we usually would. So that's the answer, really. We need to really move beyond what we would usually do, because we might have our school networks, our you know, our friend networks and our work networks, but when they're not happening in a structured way, we've got to put more effort into it. So that means making sure that you're you know, reaching out for both support as a parent, especially if you're on your own. It's really tough on your own. There are so many different Facebook pages that and a lot of online support for solo parents, but also in terms of areas of interest and for young kids as well. I know we talk a lot about not wanting to have too much time on devices, but if there aren't many other options, especially if, you know, you're still affected by a level 4 lockdown, then, you know, online world is a place where we can get connectivity and kids can play online with other kids. But just a word of warning with that, it is important to supervise what young children are doing on the internet and on the gaming, side as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, when is the point where obviously you've got to supervise and do that, and we're spending so much time, we are, and our children are spending so much time on devices. What they're also seeing, there's a lot of news all the time, and it's, you know, a lot of it is doom and gloom. What should parents do? Do they take devices away? Do they not listen to the news? What's a good guidance? Maybe start with parents of young children.
Yeah, I think parents of young children often young children won't fully grasp the news and may instead just listen and hear particular snippets of it. So if they tend or not pay attention at all, if they are grabbing on to particular things or hearing particular things that worry them, then it might be better for young ones that you rather tell them what is going on rather than using media outlets or other outlets like that. And a really good gauge for young kids in terms of what they can handle or not handle is to use their engagement with you as a measure. And what I mean by that is if they're, you know, you start explaining to them in kids' level, so not overly complicated language, just keeping it fairly simple what's going on, make sure you're always adding reassurances there, letting them know that there are people who are handling things and that it's in control, because it's a sense of out of control that can feel quite scary. But as soon as they stop listening, if they wander off or they're, you know, just clearly not listening, then you've lost your audience. And that's the time to stop. They don't need any more. So that's where you just leave it. And then if they ask any more questions, that's when you re-engage with that.
Well, and what about teenagers?
Yes, I think with teenagers, again, you're probably going to get a spectrum. So what I mean by that is some who just don't want to know. You know, they're just kind of happy just to carry on doing what they're doing, and I don't need to know, thank you very much. Right through to the other end who really want to know all of the information, and that information is either helpful or that's fuel for anxiety. So it's about kind of gauging whereabouts your teen. They're at the point where they're feeling, you can sense that they're quite stressed and quite anxious with all the information, especially if they're getting information from multiple sources and they're not always consistent. So they can contradict each other, which especially if you're looking at information from, you know, internationally versus New Zealand. So with that, then helping them be able to research appropriate sites of information. Information can be really helpful, but to a point. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it then will become overwhelming, and it can become fuel for the worry. And that's where it's important to help them support the right sources, you know, because some of them really are fear provoking.
Most definitely they are, which I suppose we've only got a couple of minutes left. But what are some of the warning signs that that there are when things are getting serious and when parents should reach out for more professional help?
Yeah. Look, I think when there have been any quite clear changes in a young person's behaviour and they are persistent and they are causing distress and they're impacting on their functioning and your functioning as a family, then you need to seek support. There are a number of helplines that are available that the government and also charities have set up. All of those are available at the Mental Health Foundation website. They've got a full list there, or you can consult your GP if you're concerned, because they're very good at knowing who's available in your local area for support.
What do you hope, I suppose, for the future of our kids? And because so many of them are really concerned about the future, and it's not just COVID, it's also, you know, climate change, all of that. You know, what's your key message, I suppose, to parents in dealing with these issues?
Yeah. The key message is we want to build resilient youth. So ones that can, that know that we believe in them, that they can do this, that they can get through this, and we're going to get stronger as a result. So we can feel overwhelmed by it, of course, upset by it, yes, anxious, absolutely, but we will get through. That's what we do as Kiwis. That is part of our culture and who we are. And that this is an opportunity for us to really show our mettle.
Dr. Sarah Watson, thank you so much for joining us this morning on Sunday morning.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much.
Some great tips there from Dr. Sarah Watson, clinical psychologist specialising in child and adolescent mental health.